Thank you, Jane. Now I invite up Paul Steele from ATAG, who's going to give his presentation.
Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Jane. And good morning, everyone. I think we're almost saving the best till last, and that is one of the most exciting opportunities, but also probably one of the most challenging opportunities that we have for aviation moving forward in dealing with environmental issues. And I've been asked to give you a sort of an introduction and a status update as to where we are across the industry and the developments that are taking place. But let me start with a chart I showed you on Monday as to why alternative sustainable fuels for aviation are a vital part of the mix, and I stress a vital part of the mix for the industry strategy going forward. And it comes into this area moving down towards 2050 in terms of how we really ramp down, how we reduce the emissions of aviation over time, and alternative fuels, particularly biofuels, are, as I said, a key component of that strategy. But let's go sort of right back to the beginning, because one of the challenges we as an industry have is that we have extremely stringent requirements in terms of any fuel that is used in aviation. The first and overriding consideration always has to be safety. We do not send passengers on adventures, we send them on journeys, and we need to make sure that they arrive safely. The second key element, in order to be able to quickly deploy and implement alternative fuels, is that they should be what we call drop-in. And what we mean by drop-in, it means that we can mix it with existing jet kerosene. We do not need to change the tanks on the aircraft. We don't need to change the engines. And we can use similar distribution systems of getting fuels to the aircraft that we do today. So it avoids having to build a whole new infrastructure for the distribution and deployment of these fuels. The other thing in aviation, of course, one of the key considerations and that's driven a lot of the efficiency work historically is the question of payload. We want to minimize the amount of unnecessary weight that we carry on an aircraft. And so in order to do that, we need a fuel that has very high density, which means that we have the highest possible energy output from the smallest possible volume. And that is another consideration that we look at. Similarly, aircraft operating a very wide band of temperatures, and therefore we need to make sure that whichever fuels we put forward have a high flash point and a low freeze point, because without that they do not have the performance criteria we need. And of course, in looking for alternative fuels, there's not really much point in doing that if you actually either equaling the amount of emissions that come from existing jet fuel, or in some cases even worsening the emissions coming out of those alternative fuels. So if you put all of these stringent criteria together, then essentially it excludes many of the first generation, the so-called first generation fuels like biodiesel, which freezes at altitude, ethanol, which also has issues. So many of those first generation biofuels that were used in the automotive industry are not suitable for aviation, and that's, I think, a very important point. So what are the key fuel types? They really fall into two groups. There are the alternative fuels from fossil sources. Now, jet kerosene is, quite frankly, a tough act to follow. It's a very, very high-density, good energy source. Anything else that we develop needs to match those criteria. Historically, we've seen fuel produced from coal or shale. South Africa pioneered that many years ago using a process called Fischer-Tropsch. And so coal to liquid, as it's called, where you take coal or shale and turn that into jet fuel, is something that's been around for quite some time. And the prime driver behind that was reducing dependency on oil, particularly for countries that needed to import their oil. Recently, there's been a lot of work on what's called gas to liquid, turning natural gas into liquid jet fuel, and you'll hear more about that this morning. The key, if you like, issues around coal to liquid and gas to liquid is that they actually in their normal raw state would actually produce more emissions than existing jet fuel. So the only way that you can really make those a viable contender in the long run is to link them in with something called carbon capture and storage. So you're basically taking the carbon out while the fuel is being produced, or in some of the latest thinking is to mix it with biofuels. But the ones that I think we're getting a lot of attention, where there's a lot of excitement, is actually fuels from renewable sources. And here, again, you've got a biomass to liquid possibility. This is using crops like camelina, jatropha, halophytes, and down the road, potentially algae, to produce biofuels, and you do that through either gasification or using the Fischer-Tropsch process. This can even be applied to urban waste, and there are a number of projects already underway where urban waste is going to be used to produce jet fuel. The second area is hydrotreated renewable jet, where you can use some of those same crop sources, treat them with hydrogen, and turn that into a jet fuel. And then the latest one, and again you'll hear about this morning, is actually using a fermentation process with a yeast-type bacteria that will actually change the fuel, change sugars into a usable jet fuel. So there are a lot of areas here of exciting potential. I think one of the other key messages right now is it's too early to pick the solution, and there may never be just the solution. What we probably will see is a combination of these things. The minute you start talking about biomass and biofuels, sustainability criteria, making sure that you are not creating more impacts by developing those fuels, these criteria become increasingly important. And so as an industry, we're working very closely with the Round Table on Sustainable Biofuels to agree a common set of sustainability criteria as we move forward. As somebody said, I think as Christopher said at the beginning, 3 years ago, this was a dream. This was still, wouldn't it be wonderful if? And I think one of the key things here is over the last 3 years, there's been an incredible amount of collaboration across the industry, but also with key governments in driving this agenda forward. And so we're now far further forward than we've ever been. We've had 5 biofuel test flights completed in the last 18 months, 2 gas-to-liquid flights, and the industry's really been collaborating and driving forward on these initiatives. One of the other key criteria is safety certification, and the good news is that certification is well underway, and we're expecting full certification of a 50-50 blend of biofuel with existing jet fuel by the end of this year or the very first quarter of 2011. And commercial jet flights on a regular basis on biofuels could be 3 to 5 years away. This is a summary of the tests that have been carried out so far. And you can see there's a wide range of partnerships that have worked on those tests. And each one of these tests has given us a body of learning that has helped us. The great news is that coming out of these tests, we know we can do it, that it's technically feasible, that this drop-in element of these fuels is perfectly doable. And therefore, that's given us the confidence to push forward. And there are more test flights planned, and you'll hear about one of these this morning. Some of the key findings on this testing has been that in terms of efficiency, where we've used a combination of biofuel with existing jet fuel, there's actually been evidence, and it's still complete evidence, but there's evidence that there's actually a fuel efficiency benefit as well as a carbon intensity reduction benefit on these fuels. And recent studies by MIT on the carbon life cycle of camelina, for example, have shown that you can get up to an 85% carbon life cycle benefit by using these fuels. From an industry perspective, as I said, it's probably still too early. It is too early to pick a winner. And so what we need to do is explore a whole range of different types of feedstocks. And on the work that we've done looking at the pricing structure of these fuels, the key element that is still unknown, if you like, is the future price of the biomass itself. That's one of the things that is going to really dictate the commercial viability of these fuels. So this is something that we're working on. But we have every reason for confidence, because when we've looked at other industries, other energy sectors, and we've looked at the scaling up of renewable energy, this chart shows you that for every doubling of capacity, there has been a significant improvement in unit cost. So as we scale up the production of these fuels, we will expect the unit cost of those fuels to come down. A recent study by E4Tech for the UK government's Climate Change Commission analysed the current state of development of these fuels, and actually in their worst case scenario they're predicting that around 40% of jet fuel could be covered by biofuels by 2050, and in the best case scenario 100% of jet fuel requirements could be replaced by 2045. So what's the challenge? I think, as Christopher said, we've come a long way. We know technically now that we have something that works and that we can move forward on. We are going to see certification finished by the end of this year or the beginning of next year. So what we continue to need to do is to consolidate the business case for aviation on these fuels. We need to agree a common set of standards for sustainability that we can work on. As I said, the industry is working with the Roundtable on Sustainable Biofuels to develop that and put that in place. There are many different methodologies for calculating a carbon life cycle analysis, and so we need to come to an understanding as what is the standard that we would like to use for those types of analyses in order to allow a proper like-for-like comparison between different types of fuels. We need to support as an industry the development of a diversity of biofuel feedstock. What works in one country may not work in another, and so I think what we'll see over time is a whole series of different initiatives using local resources to develop these fuels, and that is, I think, one of the most exciting aspects of this. There's still work to be done in improving the productivity, the energy productivity of biofuels or biomass, particularly on things like algae that promise very, very high energy output. And of course, the biggest challenge of all is how do you scale up commercially to produce the quantities of biofuel that we would need in aviation. And here we're looking for assistance from institutions like the World Bank, and I'm pleased the World Bank's here today, to look at whether you can use World Bank funding to help scale up demonstration plants in countries around the world. And also, as we go through this, it will be vital that industry and government work very closely together in partnership to create the right fiscal and legal frameworks to facilitate and accelerate the deployment, implementation, and utilization of these fuels. So in summary, this is probably one of the most important and exciting opportunities for this industry. There is a huge amount of work that's already underway. There's a huge amount of work that's already been done. There are still some significant challenges in terms of scalability, etc. But I think, again, in a spirit of collaboration and common understanding and prioritization, because this industry has no other alternatives. We can't use distributed electricity like the automotive industry. So these types of fuels are absolutely crucial for the future development of aviation. So I just tried to set the scene, and we're now going to, I'm sure, hear some more detailed analysis from my other colleagues on the panel. Thank you very much indeed.